I am sure he must come. We all want him so much. He is doing a good work. A bless the lad. A but I would like to meet him here. My soul leapt forth in response to these words. I was immediately seen and recognized. It is impossible to describe the bliss and rapture of that meeting. None but those who have experienced can understand the like. The welcome more than recompensed me for past pain and sorrow. It brought an infinite peace and calm that the world can never take away. I remained with my friends for a time, but not idle. I had learned that true joy cannot reach the soul that is inert. Action is the law of life. There was much for me to learn of spirit life and its laws, and I set myself to work to acquire knowledge, not forgetting to return frequently to earth to see if there was anything to do, nor neglecting to minister to the unfortunate spirits I met. At the present writing I have learned but little in comparison with what there is to attain, but with active powers, trained for work and study, assisted by wise, beneficent teachers, and surrounded by loving souls, it would be strange, indeed, if a spirit's course should not be upward and onward toward the realms of infinite light and truth. Engaged in the work I had chosen, I had no time for regrets. Retrospection became no longer a scourge, but a guide, which, by showing me wherein I had erred, pointed out the true way to amendment, and in striving to gain knowledge of the higher, better way of living, other way of the spirit, bound to no avenue of sensual life, but seeking the intellectual haunts of wisdom and truth, ere I found peace of mind, and, in seeking to bring happiness to others, I became truly happy myself. Again I stood in the temple of art, again I found myself in the poet's chamber, but no longer an outcast and an alien. Indeed, I was greeted as one whose coming was expected, and welcomed with a warm cordiality and royal fervor that was very refreshing to my soul. The same kingly company was assembled, but augmented by a number of other souls, rich with their freight of poetic imagery. The assembly was not composed entirely of my own countrymen and women, as heretofore, for among that mighty throng could be seen the smiling, open, intelligent faces of Thomas Moore, the sweet singer of the Emerald Isle, and Robert Burns, he who found his best inspiration amid the rugged heights and heather-crowned hills of Scotia's land. Many others were present, whom I failed to recognize, clad in the flowing robes and purple vestments of the Roman period, or in the classic garments of ancient Greece. But England's delegation was a large one, numbering those of every century and age: Pope and Spencer, Johnson, Cowley, and Butler, Dryden, Gay, Thomson, and Young, a not the sad, melancholy, pensive Edward Young of earth, but the radiant, calm, contented Edward Young of spirit life, gentle Henry Kirkwhite, liberty-loving Thomas Campbell, and stout-hearted, staunch, and true Walter Scott, who, though not English-born, yet seemed very near to me. Addison, whom I had mentioned as occupying the seat of honor before, now sat low at the feet of him who occupied the position of the master of ceremonies, and whom I recognized as the true, loyal, long-suffering, yet monarch-crowned soul, Milton. At his right was to be seen the lofty brow, and bold, fearless, speaking countenance of William Shakespeare, while, at the left, Dryden seemed to be acting as assistant or secretary. In my experience of spirit power and possibilities, I had learned to understand and interpret the waves of thought flowing from soul to soul, therefore I was at no loss to understand the purport and purposes of this convention. It was a gathering of kindred souls, met to communicate the loftiest thoughts and sweetest aspirations to each other, thus dispensing the bountiful gifts of the spirit to all who would partake. I cannot describe to you the rich, ennobling thoughts, clothed in their draperies of sweetest imagery, which flowed from the soul of him who presided, into ours, the recipients, nor the grandeur and sublimity of the ideas with which he threaded, like brands of shimmering pearls, the network of his discourse. But all was grand and glorious, beyond the power of mortals to conceive. At the close of his remarks, the company clustered into knots, discussing the discourse, comparing experiences, or revealing to each other the secret depths of their poetic souls, from which were to be drawn lines, glowing with the beauty and fragrance of harmonious lives. It was then I discovered that every soul that is attuned into harmony with the inner life, that dwells in sympathy with the divine mind, as manifested in his outer creations of will, in his natural expressions of love and beauty, is in itself a poem of rare delicacy and power, a living, breathing, animated poem, thrilled with the magic power of thought, and stamped with the eternal glory of individualized liberty, that every poetic soul is itself the production of the infinite mind, that must make itself heard in lines of glowing, inspiring thought along the pathway of human toil and suffering, and cannot fail to arouse the hidden energies and sleeping possibilities of power of those it comes in rapport with. It was then I was made supremely blessed by being taken by the hand by such souls as Cooper, Byron, A. My Boyhood's Ideal, A. Burns, Scott, Campbell, Moore, Mrs. Browning, Felicia Hemans, and others, and welcomed to this haunt of the beautiful and the good. And I cannot convey to you my exquisite sense of pleasures when my hand was again grasped by that of my helper and friend, Robert B. Braw, and I was enabled to bless him for the avenues of tranquility and peace he had opened out to me. But I must not linger here, although sweet and pleasant to me are these reminiscences of actual life in the spheres. Leaving the poet's chamber, I visited in turn the musician's gallery, the sculptor's hall, and the artist's studio. It is impossible for mortal hands to pen a description of what is to be seen and heard in them. Imagine, if you can, all the sweetest sounds your soul has ever heard or dreamed of, blended into one harmonious whole, swelling louder, clearer, and sweeter, or melting away into the far-off distance, like the gentle fading of a glorious sunset, absorbed by a finer and more ethereal beauty of azure brightness, and you will have a faint conception of the music and the singing of the spheres. Imagine, if you can, all the most graceful, beautifully molded, perfectly formed and rounded, exquisitely carved and delicately sculptured forms of statuary, of which you have ever heard or read grouped together, forming a class of the rarest workmanship and art that human skill and genius can chisel from the marble block, and you have a slight idea of the superb expression of the sculptor's soul which is perfected in the immortal world. Dream, if you can, of the most magnificent scenery the world affords, the most royal landscapes, the most superb water views, and you may be able to just approach in thought an idea of the productions of the artist's soul that line the walls of the artist's studio in spirit life. Recollect all the sweet, the beautiful, and the various expressions of the human countenance, are the fire, the vigor, and sparkling triumph of the eye, the restless energy or quiet repose of the limbs, the smiling, speaking expression of the lips, and you can faintly conceive the models and patterns that spirit artists and sculptors seek to emulate. And have they succeeded? To a certain extent, decidedly, yes. Enter a hall of statuary, and in the marble beauties, grouped together there, you find the expression of peace, hope, or joy depicted with marvelous fidelity. You observe the contour of the limbs as perfect as in life, and all seemingly permeated with that indescribable something that gives them the appearance of having the power to move, act, and walk off at will. Upon entering the artist's studio, at the farther end of which is suspended a magnificent landscape painting, you would, at first sight, believe yourself to be gazing upon a scene of natural life and beauty. The lights and shadows seem to be continually shifting, the trees to be waving their branches, and the streamlet running along in murmuring gladness. The clouds appear to be settling slowly down upon the distant mountains, while it distinctly seems to you that the cattle, grazing in the meadows, are moving lazily along, half wearied out by the incessant buzzing of the hovering insects. So it is with the music of the upper life. It approaches as near the harmonious, perfect blending of the various parts of the human voice as can be imagined, and the utterances of the poets partake of the life of the giver, and are animated with true fire and vigor, which is of itself a part of that eternal voice that is the author and sustainer of all life and being. But these spirit artists are by no means satisfied with what they have produced. They see something grander, more beautiful, sublime, and perfect, which they are striving to attain. Their ideal is as yet unexpressed, but, with the perfect development of the soul and its possibilities, all that is ever dreamed of must find expression in the outworkings of the spirit. But I have found that, with all its striving to emulate and express the workings of nature, in its perfect form, that the soul of the true artist, poet, and songster finds its keenest delight in stamping its poems, paintings, and songs upon the receptive human mind that is ready to receive, that the true poet breathes his fiery inspirations upon the slumbering soul, awakening it to life and activity, bringing to it an enjoyment and appreciation of the beauties of the inner life, and of the splendors of natural creation, that the true artist paints in glowing colors on the sensitive souls of mortals a beautiful landscape of the higher life, which arouses those souls to a realizing sense of the beautiful, and develops within them an ideal, for which they will ever strive, that the true musician and singer sends his sweet strains echoing through the souls of mortals, developing their sweetest, noblest powers, to bless and enrich the musical world, and that the true sculptor finds his delight in molding and carving out the possibilities of those he can approach, of chiseling and chipping away all that is detrimental to the spirit's growth, and bringing forth to light an angel of power and beauty from the rough, unpolished mass of individuality. In short, that the workers of the higher life do not find enjoyment in bringing their own productions to earth, but their highest blessing and privilege is in being able to impress, work upon, and guide the hidden, inner powers of souls in mortal forms until they develop the beauty and glory within them, and awaken their spirits to an understanding of beautiful life, an appreciation of the good and true, and a knowledge of the possibility of the power that is theirs. Not alone were my visits confined to the Temple of Art, although attracted to that place by the laws of sympathy and association, yet my desire to gain knowledge and a comprehension of truth led me, in company with other inquiring minds, to visit the Spiritual Congress, and to pay marked attention to the learned and honorable body there assembled, and busily employed in devising various schemes for the enlightenment, amelioration, and welfare of humanity, to visit the wisdom circles, and receive enlightenment upon the laws governing life and its unfoldments, and to visit our medical colleges and learn of the true method, not of curing disease, but of preventing sickness and preserving health. And I tell you that humanity on earth have yet to learn more of medical and legal jurisprudence than has ever been dreamed of by mortals. But I must draw this narrative to a close. I might go on multiplying my experiences almost ad infinitum had I the time and space, but such has not been my object in coming. I have endeavored to show you how a spirit, weighed down by its consciousness of misspent days and misapplied powers and energies, bowed down by its load of past wrongdoing and follies, darkened by its work neglected, and duties unfulfilled, may be able, by the desire of his own soul, and the aid and sympathy of others, to rise out of his darkened condition into the light, to work his salvation from sin and his way to righteousness. But it was no easy task. I have not given you an account of all the fiery temptations that assailed me in my search for the better life, or the bitter struggles my soul passed through ere it became the master. Through devious ways and tortuous paths the soul must pass that has done wrong to itself and others. But if it is in earnest in its desire to become better, if it craves strength and aid from the higher powers, if it reaches its aspirations out toward the better, purer, grander life of the spirit, be sure that it must and will succeed. I can dimly perceive that away down in the distant future humanity is to broaden and develop into the perfect type of angelhood, that the divinest attributes of the soul are yet to govern and control the body, and ignorance, darkness, and crime flee before the dawning light of knowledge and wisdom, and that human life is to become illuminated with the glory of universal love and harmony. I can believe that the good time coming, the year of Jubilee, the millennium, so long foretold by prophet and seer, so often mentioned in song and story, the poet's dream and the idealist's fancy, is yet to dawn upon the awakened world, when man, become strong through the educators of love and sympathy, made wise by the acquirement of knowledge, and the recognition of truth, shall look upon all humans as his brothers and sisters, shall learn that war is a crime against the human family, and tyranny, injustice, and oppression sins against the Holy Ghost. Then shall mankind fraternize, and nations sit down in universal peace. I believe that the human form is yet to bear the stamp and impress of all that is lovely and divine. I was with a friend at a convocation of spirits, where were gathered together a large throng of refined, intelligent beings, each one marked with a beauty all his or her own, and I amused myself by comparing the different individuals with the beautiful forms in nature which they reminded me of, and the resemblance here, so to speak, was so apparent that I called my friend's attention to it by remarking, "Ayo, did you ever observe that there is a certain resemblance between humanity and the forms of nature? For instance, yonder lady, with her pure, white face, daintily carved features, and lithe, willowy form, reminds me of nothing but a stately garden lily, shimmering with whiteness, and that laughing, rosy-cheeked sprite beside her, with her rounded form and well-developed features, is very like the royal blush rose of summer." "Ayo, very true," replied my friend, "and over the unit the speaker, does not his massive frame, well-proportioned limbs, lofty brow, and shining features remind you of some mighty boulder, uprearing its head with the consciousness of might and grandeur?" "Ayo, he does, indeed, the shadow of a great rock in a weary land, and just beside him rests one whose tall, straight form, beneficent looks, and air of protectiveness calls to mind the forest tree with its ample provision of kindly shade and shelter." And so we went on, drawing our comparisons, A1, with her calm, benignant smile, and a wealth of love and sympathy welling up from her nature, and expressing itself in the depths of her shining eyes, we likened to the smiling, open sea, overflowing with its wealth, and watering and refreshing the earth. Another, who was bubbling over with a superabundance of merriment and joy, we likened to the laughing, gurgling streamlet that overleaps all bounds, and speeds merrily along its way. One, of majestic form, replete with vital force, with a look of concentrated determination in his face, and an expression of energetic power impressed upon him, reminded us of the ocean, mighty in its majesty and power. One shone like the sun, another sparkled like a sunbeam, one brought an air of refreshing coolness with her, another glowed and glimmered like the autumn days. "Ayo, the fact of it is," said my friend, "all that there is good and beautiful in nature is personified and individualized, so to speak, in the higher types of humanity. All the richness and splendor of creation culminate their grandest expressions in the human form, and when spirituality has ripened and developed the soul, its outer tenement will become so harmonized with the natural life of creation, so blended with the external manifestations of God, that it will become permeated with his life, and will reflect all the beauty and fragrance, all the grace and symmetry, of his works. Do you understand?" "I did, but I know not that I make it plain to mortals. Suffice it to say, that I believe the day is coming when each soul shall have grown so in harmony with the laws of life that it will reflect upon its outward form only the beautiful and the good." I had not long returned to spirit life ere I again met my former friend and teacher, Benja, the missionary. The sage was engaged in his usual employment of aiding souls in need. The pleasure of our meeting was mutual, but cannot be expressed by mortal pen. It was of the soul, true and fervent, and shone in the speaking eye and upon the trembling lip. Since that time I have often sought the company of the sage, and always with profit to myself. He has been an invaluable guide to me in my search for knowledge, and has lifted my spirit into a pure atmosphere. Spirit life is full of such workers, and by their efforts, combined with the desires of sin-sick souls to become better, we look for the redemption of the human race from error. And now, good friends, you, unto whom I have revealed a few of the most vitalizing experiences of my spiritual life, I feel that I must draw these papers to a close, and, taking each one of you spiritually by the hand, bid you go on with your efforts in self-culture and advancement, and God speed you forward in your work for your own souls and for humanity. Again I say, It is impossible for me to convey to you anything more than a mere outline of the inner experience of the spirit. Each one of you must undergo the process for yourselves ere you can realize how intense in thought and feeling, and how thoroughly quickened into life, are all the sensations of spiritual existence. In fact, spirit is all thought, all sense, and it is as impossible to escape from ourselves, and the consequences of our lives, as it is to exist without the ordinary mode of respiration. Hence, let me entreat you to endeavor constantly and earnestly to so live that only the reflection of a pure life shall cast itself over your spirit, that only the recollection of good accomplished and evil resisted shall visit your soul when you have attained the immortal heights of the other world. But, ere I close, I feel that I must say a word in regard to the cause that lies nearest my heart. Interested as I am, and must be, in all movements of reform, all methods of advancement calculated to ameliorate the condition of humanity, and eager as I am to see the race moving along upon a higher, purer, more spiritualized plane of life, yet my soul's best endeavors must be employed in the temperance cause. As one who has sinned and suffered, as one who has experienced the agony and the vicissitudes of intemperance, I feel it my duty to hang out a warning flag to others that shall be a signal of danger to those who look that way. Sad, aye, too sad it is that, while women weep and children wail because of the misery entailed upon them, spirit life is crowded with souls that have passed out from earth with the taint of intemperance defiling their persons and dragging them downward. No wonder, then, that the angels weep in pity, no wonder that noble souls come thronging back, pleading with you to seek for good, to resist evil, and to uplift your head above the haunts of wrong and wickedness. How long, aye, how long shall this state of things continue to exist? When shall the morning dawn that shall usher in a new day, a day of universal temperance and purity on earth? When shall the darkness break, and a new era of light, of knowledge and wisdom, come flooding in upon us? Not until man shall study the laws of his own being, and, so studying, learn to live in harmony with those laws. Not until every man and every woman becomes a physiologist, understanding the structure and composition of his or her own organism, and learning of that wisdom which says, partake of nothing but what assimilates with the component parts of your body, or satisfies the natural demands of nature. Not until men and women study the law of heredity, of transmission, which teaches that whatever trait of character, whatever peculiarity of disposition, whatever fatal appetite or habit the parents possess, is transmitted to their offspring, either in a modified or aggravated degree, and is sure to crop out somewhere and at some time in one form or another. Not until humanity, learning these truths, live up to them in obedience to all their requirements will the day of universal happiness, peace, and purity dawn upon earth. I am rejoiced to find that a public sentiment has been created in regard to this subject, a public sentiment that is felt throughout the length and breadth of nations, a sentiment in favor of suppressing the manufacture and sale of alcoholic liquors, and of seeking to elevate and promote the cause of temperance, at all times and in all places. It has crept into the churches, and now the clergy dare utter sentiments in its favor. It makes itself heard in the street, and upon the rostrum, it enters our legislative halls, and demands a hearing, and it has formed organizations, the power and influence of which are felt everywhere. So much for the cause of temperance, and, encouraged by public sentiment, it must and shall prosper, and eventually triumph. A public sentiment in its favor must continue to grow until the manufacture and sale of alcohol as a beverage will be universally admitted to be a crime against humanity. No man who cares for the opinion of his fellows, and what man does not, dare to engage in the business, and intemperance be so generally looked upon as an evil that no man will or woman will raise the wine cup to his or her lips. That time must come, and may God and angels hasten the day. Now, a few closing words to those unfortunates who are addicted to the habit of intemperance. My whole soul goes out to you in sympathy, and, were it possible, I would lift you all upon a platform of mental strength and moral integrity. I do not condemn, I pity, I dare not censure, I sympathize. From my own experience, I know the road you have to travel, and, if I could, I would enfold you in that divine strength that would enable you to crush the serpent under your feet. Let me implore you, out of the deep compassion of my soul, to endeavor, with all your determined willpower and firmness, to throw off the fatal habit that binds you, to become free beings, slaves of no appetite nor passion, to crush them down and assert your manhood. Thus, with the love and aid of the angels, you will become pure, and worthy of their companionship. Go on, and heaven bless you in your efforts for self-redemption. And now, good friends, adieu. May the angels of love and harmony, of purity and peace, abide with you always, fitting your lives for a habitation of light, and an experience of joy in the spirit world. Contents. Part 1. Chapter 1. Spirit Violet. Sympathy. Girls. Old Age. Chapter 2. Spirit Echoes. A Meeting of Missionary Spirits. A Spirit Returns to Comfort Her Mother. Just Recognition of Returning Spirits. Consolatory Thoughts for Bereaved Mothers. The Ministration of Spirits. The Reign of the Summer Land. Happiness of Spirits in Communing with Friends on Earth. Poetry of the Spirit's Fears. My Mother, Poem. Chapter 3. Real Life in the Spirit World. A Darkened Spirit Led to See the Light. An Outcast from Earth Returns to Aid the Fallen. Unseen Helpers at a Conflagration. Advent of a Mortal into Spirit Life. Chapter 4. Zenkoya City and ITS Surroundings. A Temple of Learning. Hall of Metaphysics. Hall of Literature. Hall of Music. Social Life in Zenkoya. Interior View of Zenkoya. A Convocation of Women, Equality of Sex. Dwellers in Zenkoya. A Suburban View. My Home, Its Life and Associations. Chapter 5. Places I Have Seen. The People of Spring Garden City. Children's Lyceum. Harmonial City. A Magnificent Temple. City of Joy. Floralia. The Valley of Flowers. The Valley of Delight. The Happy Hunting Ground of the Indians. Chapter 6. Scenes and Incidents in the Spirit Land. Trial and Triumph. A Home for the Weary. The Condition of One Selfish on Earth. First Steps Towards Enlightenment. Enfranchisement of a Spirit. Children's Progressive Lyceums. Methods of Instruction in Spirit Lyceums. A Golden Chain Recitation. Chapter 7. How Spirits Work. A Spirit Mother Relieves an Impoverished Daughter. Parents Suddenly Bereaved. The Father's Grief Affects the Spirit. The Spirit Seeks to Make Her Presence Known. The Recognition and Its Results. Chapter 8. An Echo from the Summer Land. The Lesson of Self-Sacrifice. Days of Darkness. Words of Cheer from the Spirit Land. The Mists Clearing Away. Chapter 9. The Fortunes of Little Georgie. Shadows on Earthly Paths. A Spirit Mother Leads Her Child. Visions of the Night. Dreams That Appeared Strange. The Strange Dreams Fulfilled. Chapter 10. Lucy Aiken's Mission. Unseen Helpers. A Spirit's Efforts to Reach Her Father. The Last Penny and the Last Appeal. The Influence of the Spirit Begins to Show Itself. The Spirit Daughter's Presence. Happy Results of Spirit Efforts. Angel Visits Not Few Nor Far Between. Chapter 11. Experiences in Spirit Life. The Various Classes of Spirits Near the Earth. The Power and Extent of Personal Influence. Beulah, a Spirit Missionary. Beulah's Self-Sacrificing Beneficence. Reformation of Spirits in the Lower Spheres. Illustrative Instance of the Reformation of a Spirit. The Work Carried to Completion. The Reformed Spirit Returns to Earth to Reform Others. First Sensations Upon Entering Spirit Life. The Ultimate Reign of Peace and Happiness on Earth. Chapter 12. Sanitariums in Spirit Life. Localities and Characteristics. Methods of Treatment. Music as a Means of Recuperation. Restoration of the Mentally Diseased. Improved Medical Treatment on Earth. One of the Sanitariums of Spirit Life. Interesting Incident. A Mother Finds Her Child. Cultivation of Inherent Talents. Chapter 13. surroundings and conditions of spirits. Reasons for different views of spirit surroundings. Earthly conditions that retard spiritual progress. Worldly success often a misfortune.